Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And for the first time, we go to BTC land and we explore what's going on with Botanix and Spider Chain. And all I have to say is, wow, there's some cool shit happening on Bitcoin. And I had no idea until I went over to Asia and found out. I was like, wait, like, I mean, we've heard of ordinals and all this stuff happening and we've seen the excitement gone. But like now that these L2 like structures are coming online, it's going to change the game for real. Kit, what are your thoughts?
Man, Alicia said this closer to the end of the pod, but I feel like this should have been like our title was like, make BTC fun again.
Make BTC right? fun
like,
again with Botanix.
Like there was a moment in time when BTC was fun. Like it was exciting to be a Bitcoin holder and to have that, you know, shared excitement with the community. But I think that has definitely faded over time. And I think here is a great renaissance that BTC is experiencing.
Yeah. And I would pose this question to the viewer when listening or watching this episode. What does the ideal layer on top of Bitcoin look like? Like, what does the ideal L2 look like? What is its VM? How is it secure? What does it look like? And how is it executed? I'll leave it at that. But before we get into the episode, make sure you go ahead, give us a like, subscribe to us on YouTube, hit that bell button, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Make sure to follow all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. Go to our website, flywheeldefi.com. Go ahead and subscribe for all the latest DeFi alpha and updates. You will thank yourself later. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K. And this time around, we have Alicia, like Alicia Keys, Painter, the co-founder and COO of Botanix Labs, which is building the Spider Chain. And if you're not familiar with Botanix or Spider Chain, well, it's a Bitcoin L2. And this is the first time that Flywheel has ventured into the Bitcoin ecosystem. Alicia and I met originally in Hong Kong a few weeks ago. An early investor spoke very highly of you, and I saw your presentation, and the first thing I thought was, wow, I really need to get her on and learn about what's going on in Bitcoin land. So Alicia, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, and that's quite the introduction. I hope to live up to it.
I have faith. And to get this going, for people who aren't familiar with you, what is your background? What's your journey been in crypto? Yeah, take the floor.
Sure. I'll try not to be too long-winded here, but I'm originally Canadian, so basically raised there. And then actually after I graduated from uni, so actually I studied physics and business. And then after I graduated, I spent a few years.
Where'd you go to uni?
In Canada, Western. So actually most of the Canadians in crypto all went to Waterloo. I went to Western, which is the other school. We actually have a reputation for being a bit of a party school, which I was not a part of because I was a nerdy physicist. But so I basically, after that, I spent a few years in management consulting, like private equity, corp dev, M&A finance, and really interesting. I kind of spent most of my career in emerging markets. So I spent some time in India, in Singapore, Germany, and 3 years in Brazil. And actually, my time in Brazil is really what made me go down the crypto rabbit hole. So someone who spent, considerable amounts of my professional life in Asia, in Africa, and South America, I kind of saw firsthand how broken money and global financial and economic systems are. So when I was actually living in São Paulo, I was organizing like the startup networking event, which is still around to this day. Someone's at the door. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Do you need to go get it?
Yes, I do. Just 1 second.
A few moments later.
Basically, as someone who spent most of my professional life in emerging markets, I kind of saw firsthand, how broken money is and how broken global financial and economic systems are. And it was a tough realization for me. I spent a lot of my early career actually working for a Canadian government, was in the Model United Nations. So I was really optimistic about, policy and the impact it could have on the world. But honestly, my time in Brazil made me realize how far-fetched that was. So
it was like actually a reality check being in Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. And just realized governments can only really go so far. And what we needed was true decentralization in terms of how we approach, you know, global financial and economic systems. And so I was actually a mentor for a bunch of fintechs when I was, you know, living and working on Brazil. And all they could talk about, and this was back in 2015, by the way. So all they could talk about back then was how Bitcoin was going to change the world. And so after being told by about 7 or 8 people, I finally read the white paper and I got orange pills.
It took
and I was
7
like, wow.
or 8 people. It wasn't the fourth or fifth person. It had to be 7 or 8.
I think
hey, at least it was in the same year. So I'll give you that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was also because you have to understand, I come from like a very traditional background, like management consulting, like finance, like was an M&A, like pretty much I was a finance bro, right? So it took a lot for me to disregard my entire training and my entire education to kind of take a chance on this whole crypto stuff.
And some people hear it 20 times and it still doesn't go through their heads.
Yeah, exactly. And so read the white paper, became obsessed, started going to some Bitcoin meetups, bought my first Bitcoin at a meetup, like proper cash in exchange for, you know, keys. It was pretty cool. And then in 2016, I went to my first actually Ethereum conference because I was kind of exploring the advertence of cryptocurrency. And Bitcoin was obviously my first foray, but I found like the innovation rather limited. And I think in general, Bitcoin has stagnated quite a bit over the past few years. I think the resurgence has been due to, you know, Ordinals and BRC20, and happy to get into all of that as well later on. But went to an Ethereum conference in 2016, met Vitalik. Back then, like, Ethereum conferences were pretty small, and I was just really inspired by him and his desire to also change the world. So got quite into Ethereum, started getting actively involved in those ecosystems. Actually started trading, built my own fund, which still exists to this day. So I used to be a more active trader. Now it's basically a long-only fund that's based out of Singapore. Then actually applied to business school. So I actually went to Harvard. That's where I met my co-founder. And we were two of the few people at Harvard interested in crypto during the bear market. So started exploring it more actively.
And this was in 2016, right? 2016, 2017?
No, I went to Harvard 2018 to 2020. A few years after I got into crypto, and actually I spent 80 Bitcoin on my HBS degree. It's funny because for me, obviously Harvard was a great experience. And I'm very grateful for it. But like, I spent a lot of Bitcoin to go there. So it's like hard for me to evaluate it objectively, thinking about where that could have taken me today. But it's all good, all for a good cause. I think when I was at Harvard, I started exploring it like much more seriously. Been working in crypto more full-time ever since. Most recently was working at Fireblocks, the Walk company here in New York, kind of also an international.
What made you go from, you know, it seemed like you had a career going already, you started a fund and everything. Yeah. What made you want to go back to business school?
I think like a host of personal factors, if that makes sense. So I spent my entire life like Asia, Africa, Latin America. And I was like, wait, I really miss being close to home. You know, being close to my family, obviously that lives in Canada. So that was the main attraction for me, but also obviously like Harvard is a great school. You get exposure to people from all over the world. It's also a great way to start a business is, you know, to go to business school, meet your co-founder as I did. That's how I like met Willem, and kind of get going. So I think for me, it was a necessary decision. It was a necessary step I needed to make to transition back to North America and start entrepreneurship and also explore crypto in a much more structured way. I was basically living in Brazil and exploring in South America, and I just wanted exposure to like the North American market. That's why I decided to apply. And honestly, it was a great experience. And I think it's interesting because in crypto, corporate experience like mine and business school is deeply looked down upon. It's actually two of our investors were like, yeah, I mean, you're two HBS grads, you know, I don't know about that. So it's deeply, deeply looked down on, but I really think it's helped me a lot not just, I guess, in terms of critical thinking and networking, but also it just really develops your emotional intelligence. And one thing that they drill into our heads at Harvard is the idea of hubris and to really not press the self-destruct button when you're building a business, right? So I think crypto in general is a it's an industry that is filled with a lot of ego. And I think one thing they teach us at Harvard, shockingly, believe it or not, all day, every day, is to conquer your ego, because that is the one thing that will destroy any business. And so that is, in our team, that's...
we've seen that over and over again in crypto. Yeah. It's like the seven deadly sins. It's like one of the seven deadly sins in ancient Greece was lust. And like everybody fell to lust. In the modern age, it's greed, and everybody falls to greed.
Exactly.
And don't worry, Kit went to business school too. So I'm outnumbered here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. But please keep going. I love your journey. So you found your co-founder at HBS. Yeah. And then from there, like, did it take him a lot to convince you to come on this journey with him? Or how did that conversation happen?
It was really interesting, because he came up with this idea 2 years ago of building a Bitcoin layer two, that is EVM, and no one at the time believed in it. And even I didn't believe it. And when he told me about it, I was like, okay, so like stacks, because that was like my only comparison at that point. Yeah. And it's really funny, because I had an internship offer from stacks back in 2019. So I actually was super familiar with the space. And I was like, yeah, Bitcoin L2s have failed, or Bitcoin DeFi has failed. I don't think there is a market for that anymore. But then the more I started evaluating it, I was like, wait, this makes so much sense. You know, Bitcoin is the largest pool of capital in the world. I mean, back then it was a bit smaller, but now we're at $1 trillion of capital that's basically just sitting there and doesn't have that much utility. And, you know, with the rise of Ordinals last year, you saw how much people have that pent up appetite to do fun things with Bitcoin, right? And so, Willem had been developing it for 2 years. I joined about a year ago. But honestly, it did not take much convincing from me. So I read his white paper, and I thought it was one of the best white papers I'd ever read. Truly in true innovation in terms of cryptography. And his background is more in the cryptography side of things, right? And one thing I did was I vetted it with three of my Ethereum friends. So I actually sent that white paper to three of my most brilliant Ethereum friends. I was like, is this guy legit? Is this white paper legit? And they were like, no, this is true cryptographic innovation. And I was like, okay, that's all I need. All I need is a good product to sell. And that's how I started my journey.
So what was in, so this is the Botanics white paper, and he's been working on it for a few years. So he saw this becoming a thing.
Like, yeah, Willem is a hardcore Bitcoiner. I'm obviously way more from the Ethereum side of things, just because, you know, that's where I spent most of my time with the fund and trading and everything, right? So it was an interesting mix, because I didn't have the best impression of Bitcoiners coming in.
Yeah. Especially back in like 2019 to 2021.
Yeah.
Something that Wilhelm was doing is probably looked down upon, because Maxi seemed to rule the day back then.
Exactly. Like, I think all of the innovation and all of the utility was being generated within Ethereum. And every time I spent, like, I would go to some BitDevs meetings, and anytime I would enter these circles, it was just an echo chamber of people who were Bitcoin maxis who really were not concerned with utility. And for me, I just think crypto is so much more than just a store of value. Mm-hmm. I would like to see it transcend from a store of value to a medium of exchange to a full financial instrument and global money, right? And that requires some malleability and some utility. And those types of practical conversations I found were missing in these Bitcoin circles. Obviously, now the conversation is very different, and Bitcoin L2 has become like the number one top. It's one of the two top meme like narratives of this year. I would say it's Bitcoin L2s and Soul meme coins, right? Those are the two narratives this year. And so it's wild, because I think because we've been building for so long, we do have a massive head start, both in terms of product and biz dev and how we're approaching the market. I'm glad we were able to build in the bear, because I think that is what makes the biggest difference between good and great teams.
Yeah. And when was that inflection point with the Bitcoin community that went away from the maxis and their echo chamber towards utility and innovation? Was it with Ordinals? Was it with something else?
I think ordinals was a watershed moment. So I credit Casey Rodemore, inventor of like the ordinal theory. I think that was the watershed moment where like base layer fees on Bitcoin main layer were always like fairly low. You never had to concern about high gas fees, right? Because there wasn't that much base usage. So with ordinals, when you finally had a lot more transaction and activity on the base layer, there's finally that conversation of, okay, base layer fees are really, really high. Now we need to think about a scaling solution. So I think that was a tipping point last year. Honestly, I think our testnet coming out in November had a lot to do with it, because that's the first time people saw you can actually do like EVM on Bitcoin. Because EVM is actually the big unlock, right? So you can think about Bitcoin scaling solutions, but when you think about actually enabling programmability and utility, right? EVM just makes the most sense. You know, it has the most distribution, the most tooling, the most devs. So that the combination of EVM plus Bitcoin is I think what was the true unlock. And when I saw it firsthand was I was at Satoshi Roundtable, which is this conference that happens in Dubai every year. And that is when I saw the conversation truly shift. So from like, no one was talking about Bitcoin L2s. It was basically just stacks and rootstock. That conference, we were there, like three other Bitcoin L2s were there. And we actually had engaged in really productive conversations, you know, with the founders of Bob, with the founders of Mezo, Stacks. And we were like, actually, no, this is a real narrative. This is a real trend. Like, let's work together. And I think in general, there's been quite a lot of collaboration within the Bitcoin L2 world in terms of growing the pie together, because there's enough market for all of us, you know, because it's Bitcoin. And if you think about like with ordinals, it overtook NFTs in 3 months. So anything on Bitcoin is always like 10x bigger than Ethereum. So there's a lot of market to go around. So I'm actually quite impressed with the level of collaboration in the Bitcoin L2 space.
It sounds like there's a lot of unlocks, no pun intended, happening now. There's this pool of capital in Bitcoin, which is by far the largest, that's been just stagnant for a while, finally unlocked with ordinals. And then when fees shot up, I was like, oh, we got to think about L2s. And now with L2s in that design space, you're thinking, oh, let's take EVM, which is the most popular, VM of choice.
Virtual machine.
Virtual machine of choice. And put it on Bitcoin. There's a lot going on. So let's get into what you guys are building.
Bitcoiners were really hesitant about EVM, which is so interesting. So again, when I joined the startup, I went to a lot of these bid devs meetups and they'd be like, oh, let's not talk about the shitcoin. And they refer to anything that's not Bitcoin as shitcoin, which is like insane as someone who comes from the Ethereum world, right? Mm-hmm. And so we faced a lot of very intense resistance when we were first, you know, pitching and talking to people what we're building, because EVM was so intricately linked with Ethereum. But the way that we think about it, EVM is just a software layer. So if you think about the software battles in the 80s, right, Windows won out, not because like it was the best software layer, but because it had the most distribution. And that's kind of how we see the EVM. So we want to decouple EVM, the software layer, from Ethereum, the currency. And once you decouple that meaningfully, that's when you can unlock EVM as a pure virtual machine. And that's what we're attempting to do.
I wonder what that means for Ethereum.
Alicia, I would love to ask you this then. Like, would you say Botanix is like ETH aligned? Because that is also like a narrative and like a meta.
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably not.
Yes, that is the correct answer, I think. That is the correct answer.
Because you use an Apple phone, are you iOS aligned?
Yeah, so basically it's like, I was a massive ETH maxi and now I'm a crazy Bitcoin maxi. I think I'm actually reading this incredible book right now, which I highly recommend. One of our investors recommended it to me, Understanding Bitcoin. It's basically a textbook and it's all about basically the beauty of the white paper and the intricacy of the algorithm, the mathematical proofs that went into it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so elegant that to me, nothing really compares at this point. And I think if you think about it, Bitcoin has truly stood the test of time. You know, it has proven itself to be the most decentralized, the most permissionless, the most secure, 100% uptime, actual decentralization. And that's what makes Bitcoin great. And I think ETH as much of a massive fangirl I am of Vitalik, and it's my life dream to have a conversation with him. I had several conversations, but back then I was really stupid. Back then, I'm way smarter now. so I still love Vitalik so much. But I do think that what we're doing, which is like bringing the best of Ethereum, which is EVM, to Bitcoin, is kind of renders Ethereum irrelevant. And I'm pretty bearish Ethereum these days. And I hope Vitalik never watches this.
Well, let's continue. Spicy takes.
We're just going to clip that.
So you're thinking is like, you know, Bitcoin is so elegant. It's number one already. Like, what's the point of Ethereum already? I mean, we have the EVM. There's a point to that. But like, what's the point of it? Can we like dive into the spicy take further?
Yeah, I mean, I'm such a Bitcoin maxi. I'm like, why is anyone building on anything other than Bitcoin at this point? Like, it is so funny because I obviously, like, there's so many emerging ecosystems like Sol and obviously Base, and they all have their own utility. Like Bera, obviously, with proof of liquidity, huge fan of those guys. And so I understand the roles that they all play, but I'm like, but why not do it on Bitcoin? Just like be another.
That was the same exact argument made like 9 years ago in 2015, also 2014. I think everybody expected Bitcoin to be the internet of crypto, and that everything was just gonna be on Bitcoin. But I guess Bitcoin couldn't innovate quick enough. And then because there was a space for someone to take the mantle for that. And for a good while, it was Ethereum, and Ethereum led that.
Yeah.
And now what's interesting today is the position that Bitcoin was in 4 years ago, I feel like Ethereum is now being somewhat stagnant and having maxis take over.
Exactly.
Which is like really interesting to see. And as a ETH romantic, ETH maxi-ish, I'm not maxi, but like ETH, I call myself a romantic. It pains me to see. It pains me.
No, so, I totally get it, but we can bring you over to the Bitcoin side, I'm sure.
Let's re-orange pill ourselves. You know, re-orange I feel like pill. there's a point in time, like, you know, Alicia, like you said, as you know, traders ourselves and everybody here is, you kind of move away from Bitcoin. Bitcoin becomes like a 0% allocation in your portfolio over time as the more crypto native you kind of get. But then now it's like you're seeing effectively the resurgent, right? The renaissance of BTC like all around. The reflipping that never actually flipped in the first place. But I mean, let's get down into brass tacks. Like, what is like Botanics? How does the magic work? Like, why did it take so long for this to finally deliver upon us?
Honestly, a lot of it is constraints of Bitcoin Core. So one thing you need to understand is our technology is only possible with the Taproot upgrade that came out in Bitcoin a few years ago, right? In general, if you guys know or if you don't know, this was a new learning for me when I re-orange-pilled myself last year, right? It is really hard to change Bitcoin, right? It's a pretty closed community. It's ruled by Bitcoin Core devs and if like a few, and obviously like the whole community, right? And it's really, really hard to change that Bitcoin code. It's essentially immutable, but that's honestly what makes it great is that it's really hard to change, right? And that's what maintains its decentralization. If you think about the two core tenets of what makes Bitcoin great, it comes down to decentralization and the inherent scarcity of Bitcoin itself, right? And that is what makes it the best money in the world. So honestly, I think in terms of the lack of pace of technological innovation for Bitcoin, I think it makes sense in order for it to stay true to what it is. So that is just like an overall like comment I have about, you know, changing Bitcoin. So as I said, what we're doing is only possible because of this one recent like TapScript upgrade called the Taproot upgrade that came out a few years ago. So my co-founder, Willem, I will kind of speak on his behalf because he's the one who actually wrote the white paper and he's like the technical giga brain here. But he obviously has a very strong cryptography background. And when he was designing this, there were three things that we were optimizing for. One, decentralization, because that's what makes Bitcoin great. Two, what is possible today within Bitcoin Core without any need for a BIP, right? So a lot of the layer two solutions you're seeing in the market that are proposing ZK rollups or BitVM, that's not possible today, right? Bitcoin inherently is not Turing complete. So it needs a covenant like an opcat or a CTV in order to verify those proofs, which is not possible right now.
Wait, what's so, a covenant? What's that exactly?
Okay. Right. Okay. Let's, sorry, I'm so immersed in Bitcoin world, right?
No,
so
we're technical. We want to hear it.
Yeah. Awesome. So basically, like in order to change Bitcoin, you basically need some sort of a soft fork, right? And that is really hard to do, as you can imagine. It's really hard to soft fork Bitcoin. Actually, a great resource is covenants.info. It's a list of every single Bitcoin improvement proposal, which is basically every proposal for a Bitcoin soft fork. It's actually run by this engineer who is actually advising us, and he wrote OctX Hash, which is one of the main covenants that's being considered for a soft fork. The other main covenant that's being considered for a soft fork that you guys might have heard of is OpCat, which is the one that's being pushed by Quantum Cats and the Taproot Wizards, that whole team. Actually, their BIP came out yesterday. It was called BIP 420, which is really funny. actually, OpCat was written by our CTO, Armin, which is really cool. So we know a lot about Bitcoin Core. we have a lot of Bitcoin intellectual horsepower in-house. And even then, we were still optimizing for what is possible within the current constraints of Bitcoin, because we don't want to wait for a soft fork or a covenant to come into effect before we build, right? So again, a lot of these other L2 solutions, they're beautiful, but they're not possible. And ours is actually possible today. Right. So that's what we were solving for. And the third thing we were solving for was EVM equivalence. So we're actually using the Rust implementation of ETH or RETH. That's our EVM execution client, very performant code base. But this idea of spider chain is, first of all, like Willem came up with this concept of staking Bitcoin on Bitcoin via proof of stake consensus. He coined it in his white paper a year ago. And of course, ever since then, everyone and their mother is doing this, which is totally fine. That's how dev works, right? You spread an idea to the world and everyone runs with it. But when you stake Bitcoin on Bitcoin, it's rather brilliant because you're basically inheriting the proof of work finality from Bitcoin main layer and all of the proof of stake efficiencies of staking the most decentralized asset, which is Bitcoin, right? So the way that spider chain works is, you know, you stake Bitcoin on Bitcoin, and then over time you develop like this decentralized staker set, whereby all of these new node runners would put in some Bitcoin stake. Then basically what happens is you generate a multisig, right? And the multisig is where the Bitcoin sits and where it's secured. And the next technological innovation here, which is really, really cool, is that in order to secure that multisig, you choose 100 random participants from that decentralized staker set. So imagine you have 10,000 node runners, they all put in some Bitcoin stake. Of those 10,000, you pick 100 random participants to secure that specific multisig. And that randomization, we're using actually SHA-256, which is Bitcoin's block hash rate function, AKA the best VRF in the history of the world, right? So again, another innovation that only we are doing and I thought we think is quite clever. So you use that to secure multisig one. So imagine you have multisig one, you pick 100 random participants, you secure multisig one. Then you generate multisig two, you pick another 100 random participants from using SHA-256, you secure multisig two. You generate multisig three, you pick another 100 random participants to secure multisig three, and so on, until you have a network of decentralized multisigs, which resembles a spider web, which is where the name comes from. So it's a completely novel architecture, not a roll-up, not really, so that's why when people try to classify us, they just call it spider chain, because it's truly something that's not been seen.
So it's not exactly an L2.
An L2. And we're not a roll-up. We say this and we scream it from the rooftops for a variety of reasons. One, we just think roll-ups are inherently centralized and prone to censorship. And again, that's not great from a very hardcore Bitcoin. I'm the only Ethereum person on my entire team. Everyone else is a hardcore Bitcoiner and they hate roll-ups because it is prone to censorship and centralization, which again is counterintuitive to what makes Bitcoin great. But actually the other benefit of not being a roll-up is because we don't need to post data back to the main layer. We don't have a data availability problem. And as such, our fees are extremely low. We're at hundreds of a cent intrinsically, just because the Bitcoin is stored itself like in those multisigs and we're running the proof of stake consensus.
So it's a chain on top of a chain, and the chain on top of the chain is secured by this network of multi-sigs that are randomly generated from Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
How many multi-sigs could there be?
Kind of unlimited. Unlimited. So actually, our goal is to be more decentralized than Ethereum itself. So we think about decentralization not just from a multi-sig level, but also from a node and infrastructure level. So, you know, we're launching our mainnet in a few months. We're going to start with a federation of nodes, but we're going to implement slashing, move to a DynaFed. And a year from now, we want to get to a point where we're fully permissionless, whereby anyone in the world could run their own spider chain node. So it is our true ambition to be more decentralized than Ethereum itself.
So what's the purpose of a multi-sig?
It holds the Bitcoin.
It's where the Bitcoin sits, essentially.
Right, but for what purpose?
So it's used on spider chain.
To do...
Yeah.
So it's like on spider chain it's represented, but it's like in the same way that like on a roll-up the ETH is held in like the Optimism Bridge or the Base Bridge or the Arbitrum Bridge, it's held instead of like one like multi-sig, it's held in multiple multi-sigs. Did I get that correct?
Yeah. And I think in order to operate on the L2 EVM, the Bitcoin needs to sit in the multi-sig, right? It's like, it's kind of an intermediary layer between the L1 and the L2.
Oh, is this
multi-sig validating transactions that are happening on the L2?
Not exactly, right? The multi-sig is just, where the Bitcoin sits. The transactions happen on the L2 itself, if that makes sense, right? Which is the EVM. Yeah.
Okay, so it executes in on the EVM.
It all executes on the L2, but it references back to the multisig. So the multisigs are involved in the validation process.
Okay.
But not as directly, because you're largely operating off of the L2, if that makes sense. I'm happy to do a demo if we can do that as a part of this.
Yes, actually, please, let's dive right in there. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, the part that still confuses me is like, well, first of all, I didn't even know that Bitcoin has multi-sig capability like built into it.
It does not.
Okay. I see. So you guys had to first build the multi-sig thing. And then you guys are able to do the rest of it after that.
Yeah. Let me show you the demo, and I think it's going to become a bit clearer. So this is our testnet landing page. We've been live since November. We've had quite a lot of traction on our testnet. So we've had like millions of transactions, 200,000 wallets, 10,000 tokens launched.
Wow.
We have 50 teams building on us already. But this is the bridge. This is basically how you bridge from Bitcoin layer one to the Botanix EVM, which is the L2. Right? And everything is MetaMask, everything is EVM compatible, right? So the way that this works is you click show deposit address, and it spits out these two values. One is like the Bitcoin Signet deposit address. So this is where you, like, this is the address to deposit your Bitcoin. And then this is the corresponding EVM address. This is reading your MetaMask. So my MetaMask, I think, should already be connected to Botanix testnet. Yeah, as you can see, it's already connected. So, basically, what we're doing here is linking these two addresses. So anytime you deposit to this, it automatically outputs here. And this is, again, it's only possible due to the Taproot upgrade that I described before. And then you just hit copy here, and any wallet you have, it can be like Exodus, Coinbase, Kraken, you paste in, you can send your Bitcoin directly. And similar to withdraw from Botanix back to Bitcoin Signet, you just put in the amount, the address, and you just hit withdraw. So when you bridge in and out, you need to wait for the 6 Bitcoin confirmations, which is 10 minutes. But like, I want to show you what activity on the L2 looks like. So imagine you've already bridged your Bitcoin over to Botanix, right? So this is my Bitcoin. As you can see, it actually really tripped me out when I saw the demo for the first time to see Bitcoin in my MetaMask, if that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, it really threw me off a little bit. But this is my Bitcoin that's already been bridged over, right? So this is Bitcoin that is sitting in this network of decentralized multisigs. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to do is like demo a simple swap and just show you what activity on the L2 looks like. Cool. Yeah. So I just want to do a simple swap. So let's just buy 5 Pepe coin. And by the way, this is something Avocado Swap, it's this DEX we built ourselves. It's a basic pancake swap fork. Took us maybe 10 minutes to copy and paste the code from Solidity and maybe 4 hours to make this front end look cool. So just shows you the power of the EVM that you can fork that easily, right? Because this would not be possible in Bitcoin. So I just want to demo simple swap. So 5 Pepe coin is equivalent to this many Bitcoin. So you just hit swap, you confirm the swap, MetaMask pops up. As you can tell, if it'll pop up, actually MetaMask always overestimates our gas fees. I'm actually chatting with MetaMask about that right now. So as you can tell, everything is in Bitcoin. So contrary to other L2 solutions, everything is in Bitcoin. It's our gas token, it's our settlement layer. Everything is on Bitcoin. So now you can tell the transaction has been submitted, shows it's pending here. We have a block time of about 10 seconds. So in a few seconds, it should be confirmed and it appears as like a few more Pepe coin here. The amount is debited from Bitcoin. And yeah, so just to give you a sense, like once your Bitcoin is bridged here to your MetaMask, like anything ERC, anything Solidity is just copy, paste, deploy. So I think that's the power of the EVM. And that's why we have, you know, 50 teams building on us just because I think it was just confirmed. Yeah, it just got confirmed. Oh. So now I have 5 more Pepe coin here, a little less Bitcoin.
This is native Bitcoin. This is native Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's kind of blowing my mind here.
Yeah.
It's always been so, the
that's
holy
I'm
grail.
Like, why don't I just, exactly. Now I'm like, why doesn't everyone just build on Bitcoin? Like, it's just so easy. I mean, I spoke to this NFT marketplace yesterday morning and they were able to deploy 4 hours later on Bitcoin. And they're like, whoa, this is insane. And that's the power of the EVM. And that's also like the power of working with Bitcoin and having like access to that asset class.
You're taking the two things with the most distribution and combining them to create a super thing.
Yeah, exactly. And we're not bridging. So when we say we're bridging it over, actually the technical term is pegging in and pegging out. Bridging has a bit of a negative connotation from Ethereum land, right? Just all of the bridging hacks. So we're not bridging to other chains. This is all like within Bitcoin itself.
You're pegging because it's all native.
So can we get into that though? When you pegged over or whatever or pegging in, do you send the BTC to one of these multi-sigs and then they just kind of credit you on the L2?
Yeah, you basically mint it as ERC-20s on the layer 2.
Got it. And then this... all these selection of the 100 random multi-sig signers, their whole job is just to collect BTC that is going to be pegged in.
Yes. Collect and validate, if that makes sense.
Validate.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Is running one of these validators the same as like running a validator on like a proof of stake network?
Yeah, exactly the same. The setup is going to be very similar to that of Ethereum. We're actually working on like staking smart contract now, et cetera. So it's going to be basically the exact same as Ethereum. The best way to think of us is like an Ethereum built on Bitcoin in terms of performance. So like we kind of want to be the decentralized scaling and security layer for Bitcoin. So actually we've already had teams come up to us to build L3s on top of us, which is insane. Like rollups on top of Spider Chain. So we've already started having these conversations. I think we're still a year away, but we see ourselves as kind of like this middle layer, the next layer of scaling Bitcoin, and then rollups, other VMs can sit on top of us.
It seems like more of a pyramid than people bridging over. Because like when I think of bridging, I think of like going to like a different country or an island.
We need to work on the terminology. That's why we say peg in, peg out.
You're building on top. You're literally building on top of Bitcoin. You're building on top of like what Bitcoin has already established over the past 14, 15 some odd years, 16, I can't count, 15. Anyways, and you're built, and all of it is native. That's the thing that's blowing my mind is how native everything is.
It's, you know, the thing is when we were coming up with all of this, we just didn't think of anything other than native. So like a lot of other solutions have come up and they're bridging to Ethereum, they're bridging to Cosmos, they're bridging to all of these other chains. Mm-hmm. We're like, huh, interesting. We could have probably done that. It would have been so much easier because building on Bitcoin is super hard, as I'm sure you guys may or may not know. It's like the hardest protocol by far to work with.
Because it's so limited in what you can do.
So limited. Yeah. And there's so few Bitcoin devs in the world. Like, so the number one way I assess L2s, like our competitors, is how many Bitcoin devs do they have working for them? Because they're impossible so to find. There's like 500, you know, 10x Bitcoin devs in the world, if that makes sense, right? We probably know all of them, right? Through like through like our team, we know all of them. So that's kind of how I assess new L2s. So, like, how many Bitcoin devs do they have? Because that tells me if they can ship a product or not, if that makes sense.
Okay, so how does SpiderChain compare to other quote-unquote L2s building on Bitcoin?
I mean, yeah, I would say, like, to be, that's the thing. I think everyone's doing amazing, sweetie. Like, yeah. And I don't want to be, everyone's doing amazing. I think everyone has different solutions and everyone's solving for different use cases. I think, again, because we've been working on this for like 2 years, specifically on the idea of like a Bitcoin EVM L2, we have very strong thesis about the space, which is that we truly believe in building a Bitcoin native DeFi ecosystem, right? Where all of the yield is generated with Bitcoin itself, right? And that is why our investors went with us. That is why, like, you know, we have 50 teams building on us. That's why we have some teams that you guys know who are going to be working with us. So I think that thesis in itself is quite compelling, of building like a Bitcoin native DEX, a Bitcoin native stablecoin. Like, imagine using your Bitcoin as collateral. Mm-hmm. That is actually one of the biggest use cases we see. Mm-hmm. And we really want to hone in on those use cases. And I think that's what really differentiates us. Like, all of our yield is going to be generated within our ecosystem. We're not bridging to other chains. Again, we're Bitcoin maxis, as you can tell. Sorry, Dave, what were you saying?
I was like, what is the expected yield going to be on SpiderChain if I'm a validator?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a former like finance bro, so I've done obviously 10,000 models about this. Yes. So
this is a kit question.
It honestly depends, like the as any good finance bro or broette would say. It depends on the dApp and the use case, right? Definitely higher than Ethereum in the beginning, just because we're a new ecosystem. So it's Bitcoin. We expect like pretty high degree of like a little bit. We expect higher expected volatility in the beginning. So, but our projected range is anywhere from 10 to 20%. But honestly, if you think about Bitcoin, it has had zero yield since forever, right?
Yeah.
So even 3% is wild, right? Like,
even 1% would be wild, honestly.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I was talking to this Chinese miner, he was like, wow, I think I was saying 10 to 20%. He's like, wow, yeah, I would have been okay with 2. I was like, oh, great, cool. Like, so I just think that's the nature of Bitcoin, because no one's like, I think this is going to be the summer of Bitcoin DeFi. And once people can experience native Bitcoin yield for the first time, where there's no turning back, it's kind of going to be like a door you can never close, because people are going to now finally get used to the idea of staking Bitcoin and earning yield on Bitcoin. Okay. So yeah, that's what we're doing. It's very differentiated from, I think, a lot of the layer two solutions. We also think our technology is very differentiated, and also possible today, which, as I mentioned, I know this sounds crazy, but like, this needs to be said, it is possible today. We also have like really high buy-in from the Bitcoiner community. So our first wave of traction happened because Jameson Lopp, he's an OG Bitcoiner. He independently reviewed our white paper without us sending it to him or anything, and gave us a pretty good review. That was back in September. And that's actually what led to our first wave of traction. People were like, whoa, this tech is serious. So I think technologically we're differentiated. In terms of our go-to-market, we're quite differentiated. We've made a few key business decisions that I think differentiates us quite a bit. Also, like, just the fact that we've been thinking about this for so long, I think means we have a little bit more clarity of what we'd like to accomplish in the space. But
You're further along on the journey.
Yeah, but honestly, all of the different L2s are doing really interesting things. And as I mentioned, I'm pretty surprised with how collaborative everyone's been. Like, everyone's quite nice. And quite collaborative. We're all hosting joint events, you know, at all of these different conferences. So it's been a pretty positive environment, and I think what's really interesting is seeing a lot of Ethereum people like myself who are OG Bitcoiners, then became ETH maxis, And they're like, whoa, we can actually do this now back on Bitcoin. Let me do this. And so
come back.
I think Vitalik.
Yeah, it's very cyclical.
So he's a Bitcoin. He's an OG Bitcoiner, technically.
Yeah. So Alicia, I'm trying to follow the yield here. Is I love this use case for like just how solely focused you guys are on this one single use case, and it's a absolute killer use case for anybody holding BTC. Because I'm always reminding of this meme that I saw in like 2021, when it's like it's two groups of people. One is the Ethereum community, and one is the BTC community. Ethereum community is like, I'm into DAOs, I'm minting NFTs, I'm doing DeFi, I got a stable coin. BTC community, I hold Bitcoin. I too hold Bitcoin. Me too. I hold Bitcoin. Like, so it's so interesting to see now this one single use case to it. But my question comes from, where is this yield kind of generated? Is it from like, say Pepe is offering liquidity incentives, then it's going to pay you in Pepe coin. Then you swap this Pepe back into BTC so that you are now earning, you know, yield on your BTC. But there aren't any net new BTC that came in from the multi-sig onto the chain, right? So I'm trying to find, where is this new BTC kind of coming in from?
So I think the best way to think about it is like we're building like this full ecosystem, right? We have native DEXs, native perps, native stablecoins. Mm-hmm. They're all going to generate transaction activity. And those fees mm-hmm. is what's going to be accrued back to the liquid stakers that are securing the network. That makes sense.
Right. But those fees are pulled from the multisig that was bridged in on the first place, right? It's not like there's new BTC that was, you know, mining rewards.
I guess it's an accounting thing, right?
No, it's not accounting. I think the best way to think about it is like, yes, there are going to be trading pairs, for example, right? Like Bitcoin to ETH, Bitcoin. One big flow that we see is like, wrap Bitcoin to Bitcoin and vice versa, because wrap Bitcoin is quite a centralized type of pair, right? So yeah, basically those arbitrage opportunities, once you convert them back to Bitcoin, right, that's where a lot of that yield is going to accrue from. And we're going to have a ton of DeFi primitives, right? We're going to have stable coins, perps, DEXs, lending, borrowing, staking. So imagine for every single one of those vertents, that's going to generate some velocity, some transaction activity. All of those are going to have individual yield opportunities and yield strategies. And that is going to eventually accrue back to individual yields, both for those individual dApps, liquid staking, as well as like the stakers that are about like securing the network. They're going to be compensated in terms of like increased transaction velocity, volume, and the gas fees from the network. So it's like several layers of yield, if that makes sense.
Right. And because the multi-sig, the reason why you want to participate in the multi-sig in the first place is that you earn these transaction fees.
Exactly. Right?
Is that the way I'm taking it? Okay, so that's like the yield on BTC.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the node operators will get compensated. And it will all be like within Bitcoin essentially, because all of the transaction fees are in Bitcoin.
Gotcha. And then you mentioned something about like, you know, the proof of stake on top of the proof of work. And that's kind of like the massive innovation here. And is the stake portion all the BTC that is in these multisigs? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But in a yes, essentially, that is, I think, the most simplistic way to think of it. Yeah.
Got it. And they would get slashed if they did something bad, right?
Yeah,
as like
exactly.
The multisig. So these multisigs, they have to put up some BTC on their own. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to make sure I expressed.
No, exactly. That's exactly the right way to think of it. So right now, as I mentioned, we're starting off with like federation and proof of authority. But like the next step would be implementing slashing for bad actors. But honestly, we have provisions throughout our throughout Spider Chain design. So we actually ask for 2/3 majority in every single step of the way. So you basically need, it would take a lot to incur a civil attack, because everything is done with a 2/3 majority and you have the 100 random participants. So you need a 2/3 majority of those 100 random participants. So it's really hard to enact any sort of civil attack as such. But we do also have slashing provisions for bad actors as such. So, and that's going to be like in the next iteration like once we move to a Dynafed, is that's when we're going to start. That's when we're going to implement slashing.
Yeah, and I absolutely want to get into the forward encryption that William spoke about in one of the pods, but because that I think is so obvious that should have been the case for kind of everything. But we'll get to that. I want to finish this proof of stake thought. It's like, so I am a multi-sig participant. I need to put up some BTC for me to do the work. Now, is the amount of BTC that all the multi-sig put together has to be greater than the amount of BTC that they are securing?
Yes. I think the best way to think of it is like, for example, in one multi-sig, if you have like 100 random participants, that's, let's say that's 300 Bitcoin, right? So that's like the amount in that specific multi-sig. And actually this ties well into like forward security. The best way to think of it is basically like LIFO, if that makes sense, right? So last in, first out. So if there's any malicious attacker that takes control of MS4, multi-sig 4, they would not have access to any previous multi-sig. And this seems like an obvious thing, but it just has not been implemented cryptographically. And it's actually it's a pretty core tenet of cryptography in general that we're bringing into cryptocurrency, if that makes sense. So that's kind of how those two concepts tie together.
Got it. Did you just get the door?
A little bit, yeah. Can I do that really quickly?
Okay, go. Yeah.
A few moments later.
Something I wanted to ask, because another thing I saw in my travels that was quite popular was Babylon, which combines Bitcoin and restaking. Yeah. It's Eigenlayer for Bitcoin Kit. I'm just wondering, like, how does Babylon compare to SpiderChain, and how does Babylon compare to Eigenlayer, if you have any color on that for our listeners?
I mean, it's hard for me to opine strongly just because they're a pre-product right now, right? Mm-hmm. It's a great pitch. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of factors up in the air. It's a really hard product to build. And they're, again, I think we have different value propositions. So Babylon is about bridging to Cosmos for yield, right? We're not, as I mentioned, bridging to any other chains. Everything is Bitcoin. So a little bit different. And so our source of yield are all going to be like endogenous with Bitcoin native DeFi components. So that's probably like the easiest explanation. But honestly, we see Babylon as kind of like a cooperating factor. So I can see Babylon as being maybe like one of the targets for folks that are using Bitcoin on our network might want to bridge to Babylon to access yield over there. I just think of it as like diversified yield opportunities for Bitcoin. And so Babylon is one of those yield opportunities, if that makes sense.
I got it. Kit, you could continue with the forward encryption.
No. I want to tap into this restaking bit. I won't get too deep into that anymore, Alicia. But this restaking bit, I think, is very interesting, because when I first started doing research on Botanix, my first thought came to my mind was like, if they could do it for their own EVM, why can't they do it for any like VM? And they would just provide the security of BTC, right? It just almost like modularized the BTC stack and front run all the modularity narrative that's going to come, right? I can already see narrative that happened on ETH would just play it out on BTC. But let's front run it to modularity. Is it possible then for each of these multi-sigs that was confirming and also, you know, handling the pegging in and pegging out, do that for another chain rather than the Botanix EVM on top?
Yeah, so EVM is our first product for obvious reasons, just as I mentioned, has the most distribution, all of that. But honestly, we want to expand to other VMs. So SVM is probably the next natural VM that we would expand to. We're big fans of movement. So MVM might be like another contender, just because I think it's solving an interesting use case. So we want to expand to all of the VMs if possible. As I mentioned, we truly want to be like this middle decentralized scaling and security layer for Bitcoin. And we see that as being like applicable to all of the different VMs. So that is very much the vision. And I think that's what we all kind of signed up for, which we think is much more exciting than just building on EVM, though the EVM just made a lot of sense for us as a natural first choice.
Got it. And earlier in the call, we talked about being, ETH aligned. You guys are very much clearly BTC aligned, and you guys can pretty much run any VM on top. You don't really you know, obviously you care, but the, yeah, the main thing is that it settles onto BTC and that's the core. So I have to ask, like, will there be a Botanix token and what kind of tokenomic modeling is around that?
Yeah. So the short answer is not right now. Not right now, not for the foreseeable future. I think what I tell folks is, you know, our singular focus is building the best product in the entire world. And we think it's a massive differentiator for us that our token is Bitcoin. It's our gas token, it's our Solomon layer.
Absolutely.
We're good for now, I think.
Got it. And so how does Botanix generate revenue right now? Because for the L2s, yeah, it's all like the sequencers, right? Like that just prints for them. So yeah, does Botanix have a similar system or probably not?
Nope. No sequencer revenue. And so as such, we just take 20% of staking rewards. That's kind of what we do for the folks that are staking Bitcoin as part of the validator set. That makes sense. From overall transaction fees on the network, we take 20%.
Ah, okay. There you go. Understood.
Yeah, which, okay, sorry, that translates to staking reward for the node operators. So we take 20% of that. That's kind of our revenue model. So we're good for now, I think. We'll be like actually revenue generative on day one.
That's massive.
And honestly, I think the fact that we don't have a token plan anytime soon has given us a lot of reputation and credibility in the market, and what really attracts Bitcoiners. And that's quite 100%. Important to us, right? So I think we're the only L2 in the world that is maybe adopting a strategy like this. Yeah, we will, it's more of a not right now, but someday.
Someday we'll be granted responsibility over Spider Chain and beyond.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. Can I make a bold prediction here? Is I can almost envision this as a Uniswap sushi swap moment where you guys have grown to such a size where everything is happening on you, and then some other random entity would just like fork your guys' code and just try to run it back turbo, and then they release the token, and then you guys would be like, oh my goodness, we kind of need to combat that.
You're making me nervous.
Hence the Uniswap.
It hasn't even launched yet.
sorry. Yeah. I'm just front running all the narratives here because I'm imagining just like the ETH kind of playbook happening now,
yeah,
on BTC.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on that exact statement, but I not in a public forum can I share my opinion on.
Got it.
Well,
got
after
it.
The
we'll,
show. After
we'll do this, the show. We'll do this off the record. Okay.
Okay. So perfect. Let's get into the roadmap of Botanix and Spider Chain. You said in a, you know, you keep on foreshadowing this BTC DeFi summer. Should we expect Spider Chain out by the summer? What dApps should we expect on there? You said it's names that we should know. Is there anything you could reveal yet? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, nothing I can reveal yet as such. A lot of our teams are in stealth. The only one that's out of stealth is Bitsy, which is going to be our flagship DEX. Yeah, they've been out of stealth for a while now. We're definitely looking at a summer release date. Can't confirm an exact date because I don't want to say something that we cannot uphold. My number one pet peeve is pushing back a mainnet release date. And honestly, I take lead from our CTO, Armin, and whenever he tells me the product is ready, that's when we're going to go with it. We're not going to rush it because this is real Bitcoin at stake, right? So despite the fact that I think we've had the most stable testnet, we've got a lot of comments on how robust our testnet has been. We just want to, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's and make sure everything's teed up appropriately. Yeah, we very much are hoping to engage in the summer of Bitcoin DeFi is what I will say. Yeah.
And, you know, something we talked about earlier is kind of the culture of Bitcoin and Ethereum. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, how are they similar? How are they different? And what your kind of words of advice is to the ETH community right now that is kind of in a maxi rut to get out of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that both communities are ideological in their own way, right? I think Bitcoiners are generally like decentralization maxis, proof of work maxis, actually just convincing them on proof of stake Bitcoin staking was quite a challenge, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So they're a little bit more resistant to change in general. And Ethereum maxis are much more innovation and utility maxis, if that makes sense, right? At the expense of decentralization, which is totally fair, because that's the pool that I waited in for so many years. I think like both communities have a lot to learn from each other. But I do think that what I've noticed in Bitcoin is there's just a trend towards more utility and more fun. And like one of the main narratives for this year is going to like be make Bitcoin cool or make Bitcoin fun again. Absent of all of the political affiliations of that specific statement. But I think that a lot of teams, a lot of products that are launching on us are doing really cool stuff like games or predictions markets or meme coin launch pads. Just doing things fun and stupid on Bitcoin, I think is going to be a really big cultural game changer. And I think Bitcoin is starting to take itself a little less seriously and lean into the degeneracy of it all. And once I think Bitcoin truly embraces that, that's when I think that true innovation is going to flourish, you know, when they allow that level of degeneracy to occur. So in that way, I do think it's going to mirror a lot of the waves of innovation in Ethereum, probably at a much more accelerated pace and probably at a much bigger scale. And my proof and my advice for ETH maxis is look into Bitcoin, because now everything you can do on Ethereum, you can do on Bitcoin. And why not? It's fundamentally more sound money. And I think every Ethereum person would agree with that. You know, I don't know a single Ethereum person that doesn't think that Bitcoin is still the best unit of money out there, you know? So I think if you fundamentally believe that assertion, why not choose to build on that instead? And participate, I guess, in that transformation.
So what do you think happens to all these other L1s out there in the world that are EVM or trying to do their own thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, like, a lot of them I think are really, really cool. Like, as I mentioned, I think Sol and Base and Bera, Mantle, like, all of them are... Even Ton is like coming up, and I think they're doing cool things. Mm-hmm. I think they're all interesting for specific use cases. Probably the most interesting one that I'm looking at is Solana, right? Just because its high throughput just lends itself really well to like high frequency trading use cases, gaming use cases, social use cases, much more retail use cases, right? So I think like for Bitcoin, the whole point is decentralization, which makes sense for money, which makes sense for so many like underlying financial applications. But I do see how the other chains make sense for other use cases. Like it makes sense to me that Solana is becoming a retail hub, right? Same with a Base, same with a Ton, right?
It so sounds I think, like Ethereum is in like a weird place.
Yeah, I don't know so much about Ethereum actually. I think it's because Ethereum, everything that Ethereum, is good for, I think can be done on Bitcoin or any of these other more specialized L1s. So I think Ethereum's positioning in the market is going to be interesting to watch. I obviously will never count them out. I am a former ETH maxi. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt and how Eigen also shakes things up. I think that's going to be a pretty big game changer for Ethereum. Some people say it might be the end of Ethereum as we know it. And some people say it's going to be its salvation. I think it's too early to tell. I think we'll know like a few months from now.
I wonder what the yields on Eigen layer is going to be. And that's the ultimate question once we get the points and everything out of the way.
Yeah. I think that's a great question I think to everyone in the world, you should be asking, where is that yield coming from? I think that's just a good way to diligence projects. I mean, I have 100 financial models I can send over for every single dApp on our network.
We should get you a show on Flywheel, Alicia's financial models. Just go.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's just a great question to ask every project in the world is like, where's your yield coming from? And of that yield, what percentage is generated by Ponzinomics? which it is a part and parcel of working in DeFi, right? Mm-hmm. But it's correct. Has to be with some level of balance and restraints. And so I think that balance is what we all need to be mindful of.
Yeah, I concur. Kit, what any more thoughts, any more questions?
No, I think, you know, Alicia did a phenomenal job. I'm
so
like
sorry.
This close to getting orange pilled. Like I'm so close to getting, it's like, it's just right there. It's in my hands. I just gotta find the right water to down it with, but I'm right there to getting back into the BTC camp. I'm with this movement though, Alicia, you said to de-boomerfy Bitcoin and bring on the degeneracy and the fun, like the fun again. I think that is so critical.
Wizards have been doing a great job of that.
They're incredible. And, they're incredible. So like, I think they've truly tapped on something like Udi and Eric and that whole team. I think they're leading the way. We're big fans of them personally, obviously. And so, they're great follows, just in terms of thinking about this. And I think what I'll do, Kiet, since you are so curious about the technical stuff, I'll send you the Jameson Law article, which describes the white paper better than our white paper itself does, to be very honest. And that's kind of the best way to learn about the spider chain and all of its like design parameters, because it is truly quite unique.
We love it. We love it. And I actually, one final question for me would be, Alicia, like, what does a successful mainnet launch look like to you?
Yeah, I think for me, it's like launching with a full DeFi ecosystem and considerable retail and institutional activity starting day one. Honestly, I just want to make products that people use and help make Bitcoin relevant again. And so if we get in that inflow of real and meaningful retail interest, get people to engage with Bitcoin, because if Bitcoin is truly going to be the global money of the world, right, it has to start with building these like fundamental financial building blocks. Mm-hmm. And if I have any part to play in building these building blocks, I think that's a win. Greater adoption, greater acceptance of Bitcoin as a currency reserve is a huge win. So I think being a part of that conversation that's moving Bitcoin forward is in general a win for us.
Yeah, I have one more question actually. And on one side where you are, there's, you know, development on Bitcoin. And on the other side, we have the institutional flows coming in with the BTC ETF. What are your thoughts on the BTC ETF so far? And what does the BTC ETF and its inflows mean for what you're doing with Botanix and SpiderChain?
I think they've been instrumental in obviously drumming up considerable price action and interest back into Bitcoin. They're zero relevant for what we're doing now. zero relevant. So I used to work at Fireblocks. I worked a lot with institutional clients, worked a lot with regulators. from a regulatory perspective, the United States is lagging the entire rest of the world. I'm bearish the US, which is why I'm moving to Asia next month. And I think it's not going to be possible for the United States to catch up. And a part of that is going to be the litany of restrictions placed on ETFs, justifiably so, perhaps. But none of that ETF volume is going to be able to participate in Bitcoin DeFi summer.
You say it how it is, whether it's about Ethereum, about Bitcoin, about the US, it's a straight shot, straight shooter.
Yeah. I mean, the US is just, I think obviously like great, great builder teams out here. And I think we're trying our best. I mean, we're basically an American team. But at the same time, the regulations make it so hard to meaningfully innovate in crypto, as I'm sure you can relate to, Dave.
Yeah, all too well. Do you see that changing at all, even if like the administrations change?
No. Not anytime soon, I think. It's just the country's, just the way that policy works in this country, again, coming back full circle, there's just too much money and power with a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. And I think unless that fundamental power dynamic shifts, it's unlikely for regulation to move meaningfully. So I don't see it. I think maybe it'll become more favorable with administration changes, but not at a fundamental level. I don't think so. Like Caitlin Long at Custodia Bank, she's brilliant and she's been fighting the good fight for many years, and it's hard, right? And yeah, she's a brilliant, respected woman. And even for her, it's been really, really hard. So yeah, I think it's just it's quite an intractable conversation in the United States for a litany of reasons.
Yeah, it's sad, but
I
will always be optimistic and hopeful that things can change, and hence why I'm still here for now. But you know, the waves are go different directions.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyways, we can wrap this interview up. But before we go, we like to do a lightning round, so get to know you off-chain. Wow. Yeah. So
okay. Yeah.
More fun, lighthearted questions. Kit, go ahead.
Really quick, really short. So, Alicia, what was your virgin crypto experience? When did you first touch the blockchain? But sex doesn't count.
I mean, buying Bitcoin at this meetup in 2015 with hard cash.
With hard reals.
The OG way.
Hard AIs, yeah, hard AIs.
Like literally cash in hand, and you just hand it over. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, even when I was selling my Bitcoin to go to HBS, that was a cash transaction. Like, it was like proper OG style.
That's so cool, so cool. All right, second question. What is your favorite off-chain touchgrass activity, hobbies and interests?
I'm a big yogi. I practice yoga every single day. And if I don't do yoga, I become unhinged on Twitter. So that's when you know I've not done yoga.
Next time I see you unhinged, I'm like, did you do yoga today?
Yeah, basically.
This is pre-yoga, Alicia.
Yeah, for real.
What would be advice to your younger self?
That's not a lightning question. I was like, wow. I would say, like, everything happens for a reason, and everything has happened when it's meant to happen, if that makes sense. So perhaps not to live life so seriously or think too much about what's happened or dwell too much in the past, maybe. Nice. That was very philosophical. I'm sorry. Buy more Bitcoin. I don't know. Like,
you can't do that one. So many people say that one. Last one from myself is: if you weren't in finance, tech, or crypto, what would your professional career path be?
I would be a journalist, 100%.
Oh, love that.
As I told you, like, I'm obsessed with like fixing the world and saving the world and kind of rethinking global systems and how to deconstruct them in ways that actually serve the people. And I think journalists are basically at the forefront of all of that.
And one last question for me. Who do you want to see as a guest? Who would you recommend to have on the show?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm trying to think of hardcore Bitcoiners, probably like James Sunlop, who wrote that article.
I'd love to have him on. I've been following him.
Yeah, I'd love to have him.
I was going to be like Michael Saylor, Arthur Hayes. Probably more tangibly, like maybe some of these other folks. I think Max, who's building our DEX on Botanix, he's brilliant. He's also a reformed ETH maxi. On a more realistic note, Vitalik, who knows? You guys should go for... Have you had like Smokey?
We've had on Smokey.
Yeah.
Smokey's a friend of the show.
Yeah.
I'd love to have on Jameson Lopp, if you could connect me to him after the show.
Yeah, we can connect you to him. Yeah.
That'd be so awesome.
He's just like, he's very like reclusive. He's in a privacy maxi. So like, he's a hard man to get a hold of or nail down, if that makes sense. Like, we had him on for one of our Twitter spaces, and it was like, it took a lot to convince him to attend a Twitter, but yeah, I think we can definitely make that happen.
Oh, let's go. But Alicia, thank you so much. Alicia, like
thank
Alicia
you for
Keys.
Having me.
Of course, where can people find you and Botanix and SpiderChain?
Please find Botanix. Our handle's @BotanixLabs. obsessedbotanicslabs.xyz or Z, sorry. And I'm on Twitter at Ali Paynes, A-L-I Paynes, because my last name is Painter. And I post a lot about Bitcoin, and that's what you need to know.
Perfect.
You want to get your fill on Bitcoin, follow Alicia.
Yes.
Thank you so much, and we hope to see you again soon.
Yes, thanks for having you guys. Lovely meeting you both.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Postgame Show. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K, and we have just been re-orange-pilled,
Kind
of. Finishing up the episode with Botanic Spider Chain with Alicia Painter, who's the co-founder of it. This was a really cool one because I think Kit, me and you, coming in from 2017, we were both introduced through Bitcoin, at least
correct
for myself speaking.
Yes, same.
And I think we had this, like, that was our first love, per se. And then for years, like for me, it was for years, like, oh, like BTC is the center of gravity. And then I think that went away during DeFi summer, to be honest, and when DeFi Dave came about, because I just saw all this stuff happening on Ethereum. And I think a lot of people that followed the 2017 to 2020 DeFi summer route and forward became much more Ethereum maxi and Ethereum aligned. Of course, some people went to Solana, but, you know, but now it's coming full circle again. Bitcoin is having this, like, revitalization of innovation that it basically missed out on the last cycle. So and Botanix is definitely leading the way. I'm really happy I met her.
For real,
because this was a really cool episode.
100%. I feel like this is one of the episodes where I came in with so many questions and I was very excited to effectively dive really deep, and I think we kind of got a bit of that today here. This is on me to do more homework afterwards, but, you know, she said this herself, was asking, where does the yield come from?
Where does the yield come from? Yeah, that, I mean, that's what we asked.
I literally asked that in the show because I just, with all these new kind of tech kind of pushing the envelope here, it's like, that's a question that always grounds me and helps reminds me of the right kind of due diligence one must do, because I still don't quite understand how. Yes, I get that you will receive Pepe for LPing BTC Pepe, but then you have to sell that Pepe for BTC, but all the BTC that exist on Botanix had to be pegged in the first place. So it's not like BTC was created to kind of add into it, right? So
that's why it was like an accounting thing, because all the BTC is held in the validators.
Correct.
And, you know,
but
some of the BTC is validator BTC. Other BTC is like user-owned BTC.
Correct.
And so when a user spends their BTC on fees, it goes to the validator. That's how I thought of it.
Yep. No, that's spot on. But then I'm thinking is like, now, you know, when somebody swaps that Pepe yield that you receive for LPing Pepe BTC, now that BTC is like you took another user's BTC. So somebody took an L on that, right? So that's kind of like my question is like, where does the net new BTC is generated? Like, how do you get yield on BTC? Because somebody lost that BTC. So somebody got negative yield for you to get your plus yield, because there's only 100 BTC. Right? I mean, sure, they're risking it on the Pepe, but I guess same could be said about, you know, ETH Pepe pair on Uniswap. It is. That was just the one thing that was kind of locked my mind. Maybe I'm just like mid-curving this so hard because this is like so new.
What do you think of her ETH views?
I think she's spot on. I think your view, like your a setting of where ETH is relative to all the other chains, and also her kind of context over it all, is like ETH is now in this redundant state almost.
Yeah.
Sorry, Vitalik. You know, it's almost kind of in this like redundant state of trying to figure out his legs again. And maybe restaking is what is needed to bring it back to the forefront.
Maybe. I hope so. As an ETH romantic, I want you not to exceed.
So I think like the ETH restaking also would then get replaced by BTC restaking, because if you like ETH security, then you gotta love BTC security. So it's like, again, now that's gonna be front
round. I would say though, the only what ETH has going for it is that it's sustainable. It's like literally a sustainable revenue generating platform. with.
Oh, I thought you meant sustainable as in like green, as in like eco-friendly. But
I guess what you mean by revenue.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought you meant.
But like, it's, you know, technically, you know, is bringing in revenue. I think I saw like a really funny picture on Twitter, or infographic on Twitter, where like ETH is literally the only one bringing in revenue, yet it has between BTC, Solana, and ETH, but yet it's the worst performing coin.
Yeah, because revenue is we don't use the R word.
We don't use the R word
in crypto. No. That's negative. You know, imagination is always stronger than actuality. So, I feel like what's exciting for me about Botanix and kind of L2 on BTC is like, I wonder how much lethargic capital would actually move on BTC into Botanix and ape. I know Ordinals and BRC kind of like lends itself to, like, hey, people are hungry to ape, like really hungry to ape. But is it really that 1 trillion market cap that is hungry to ape? Like, or how much of that is like just, hey, I'm just going to hold it because this is the store of value. Like, I don't treat it as anything else. So, you know, but even then, even if Botanix were to just eat up all the alt L1 activity and bring all the alt L1 users over to BTC, that also works too. You know, I wish I got to ask her, like, are you building this product for other alt L1 enjoyers, or are you building it for like BTC enjoyers?
I think building it for distribution. So I would assume, I think everybody, like the best of both worlds, like BTC people, EVM, alt1 sure. people, enjoyers. Honestly, when I went to Dubai, I feel like that's what Monad was doing. Monad was like uniting everyone. Monad like had, I remember they had, at their event, they had like Solana projects, Avalanche projects, Ethereum projects, just all under the Monad, just like, and everybody was like interested in Monad because they were like united. I wonder if like Botanix is doing the same thing, but with this like BTC kind of, you know, umbrella over it all.
Dude, I'm kind of excited to see like what this meta narrative plays out like. Like, do we get new main characters?
Yeah. You know? No, I think like the system they built is incredibly exciting. Like the, like how they have proof of stake on top of proof of work. It's funny. You know, I said I'm an ETH romantic. I'm a proof of work romantic. I think proof of work is one of the most elegant consistent systems ever. Like turning energy, pure energy into value and currency. I just think that's so cool. I mean, so like still see that use and then have proof of stake on top of it. And the system they use for proof of stake with, you know, if there's 10,000 people and you have like 100 multi, and you have all these like a multi-sig with randomly 100 people on the multi-sig. It just sounds like it makes sense. It sounds like they're building like a pyramid. It's like you have proof of work as the base, 100%. Proof of stake as the next level. Then you have L3s as the next level, and you're going to have a level F, you know, it's literally a BTC pyramid.
Yeah, no, I see your analogy, and I, like I said, like I am curious to see how much demand actually flows over, and I'm sure there will be a ton because it's going to be an EVM bridge. Like that's what's most bullish for me is if you remember for the alt L1 last cycle, the reason why everything kind of was able to blow up so easily is because EVM was everywhere. You just bridge the same assets over, and now you could do that with BTC. So I just think it's you know, that's really attractive.
It'll be interesting to see how their distribution thesis will pay off in this regard and what kind of activity they'll get when their mainnet launches soon, TM. But anything else, Kit?
No, we're good, man. Sign us out.
We're going to sign us out. So make sure you go ahead, give us a like. Give us a comment, let us know what you think, hit that bell button, subscribe to our YouTube for all our updates, follow us on Twitter, follow us on TikTok, follow us on Telegram at FlyboDeFi. You know, make sure to go to our website, flybodefi.com, subscribe to us, you don't want to miss a beat for all your latest alpha. I think we're gonna do more BTC things. I'd love to have Jameson Lopp on. I'd love to have like Elizabeth Stark on too. That'd be so cool.
Yes.
Yes. Sam McCullough would be super happy. Sam, we finally
speaking of Jameson Lopp real quick, it's like I followed his guide on how to create your own self-directed IRA to buy BTC in your IRA in 2017.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was game changer. Yeah.
And make sure to follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.